Ruchim Haboyim. Welcome everybody to what this evening will be number 33 in a series of 1,000 lectures in successful parenting. You know, the worst enemy of a child, and particularly of a teenager, is not bad peers, it's not a learning disability, it's not failure in school, although all of these can contribute to a child's rebelliousness. The worst sakana, the biggest hazard for a teenager on this world is confusion. When a teenager is confused, he becomes vulnerable to anybody that offers him directions out of his lost, confused world, even if that somebody offering him directions is the Yetzer Hara. Now, as it happens, the Yetzer Hara is more than willing to offer him the directions, and always does. A confused child is willing to take any path they see out of the confusion, even if the path is the wrong one. Now, teenagers are confused enough as it is, even without adding any confusion to them, because a teenager doesn't even know if he's an adult or if he's a child. A teenager looks at himself in the mirror and sees this half-adult, half-child, and feels sometimes like an adult and sometimes like a child, because he actually, literally, is halfway between adulthood and childhood. So this teenager sometimes doesn't know how to act, sometimes finds that his feelings and his actions are contradictory, because one is, let's say, the feelings of a child, but the actions are expected to be the actions of an adult, or sometimes the feelings are that of an adult and he finds himself behaving like a child. So the teenager's repertoire of confusion is already quite large. Even the Torah treats them in something of a half-adult, half-child manner. Halacha is that an adult over 20 years old is fully responsible for their actions, and a child under 13, for a boy, and for a girl it's under 12, is not responsible for his or her actions at all. Between the ages of 13 and 19, inclusive, and for a girl it's one more year after 12, which are precisely the teenage years, from 13 to 19, the Torah gives the person a status of half adult and half child. Half adult, meaning that if they do something that's punishable by Bezdin indeed punishes them. And in that sense, to that extent, they're responsible for their actions. On the other hand, if they do something that's not punishable by Bezdin, but rather punishable merely bidei Shemayim, Hashem does not punish them for their actions, does not hold them responsible punishment-wise until they're age 20, which means until they are no longer teenagers. So, from the way the Torah treats teenagers, we find that they are considered not fully adults, not fully children, somehow half-half. And being half-half of anything is completely mind-boggling. Just imagine waking up in the morning not knowing who or what you are, feeling contradictory feelings and performing contradictory behaviors. Oh. Sometimes teenagers get over it. For the most part, they do. Most of the time, teenagers maneuver or glide or slide through their teenage years successfully. Baruch Hashem. Tehillah L'Kel Yizbarach. Sometimes the confusion sometimes lead to rebelliousness. And we're talking just about the confusion of being a teenager. what teenagers need less than anything else is more confusion on top of what they already have as a confusing life. Confusion, being perplexed, is the worst thing that a teenager can do. And so, it's the job of adults or anybody who comes in contact with teenagers, anyone who has an influence on them, to make sure that they don't add to their already enormous levels of confusion. And this evening we're going to speak about a few ways that teenagers often become confused and how we can avoid it. Well, there are a lot of ways. We had mentioned a while ago that when there's a problem with shalom bayis in the home, that's one way teenagers can become confused. And not only teenagers, little children as well. To a child, the most inviolable rule of nature is that mommy and daddy get along. To a child, the home is a microcosm of the universe, a comfortable home. Sends a child a message that the world is a comfortable place. A solid, dependable home sends a message to the child that the world is a solid, dependable place. A reliable home teaches a child that the world is reliable. A home where suddenly the shalom bayis is sundered, where the structure is broken down, where mommy and daddy fight constantly and consistently, and maybe more than fight, maybe they're not together anymore. Well, that teaches a child that what they thought was reliable, what they thought was inviolable, what they depended on, what they relied upon, cannot be trusted. And it teaches children that the rules in the world do not work. The world does not play by its own rules. You never know what to expect. You never know when somebody's going to stab you in the back. You never know when someone or something is going to betray you, trick you, delude you, deceive you. And these children grow up with the attitude that the world is a phony place. Don't trust anything. Good guys certainly don't finish first. What goes up doesn't necessarily come down. 1 + 1 is not necessarily 2. And the only thing you can trust is the strength of your own right arm. And they use it as their way to go through life. And these children often become antisocial. They often become misanthropic. And very often, they just veer off from the normal social path that people are expected to travel on, and rather than try for success through the normal avenues, through the normal ways, these children, when they grow up, thinking that the normal avenues of success lead to betrayal and to deception, will try to create their own avenues of success, not through creativity, but through antisocial behavior. Halavai, it should be through creativity, but that's not the way it works. So, bad shalom bayis is one way that children get confused. Another way is through hypocrisy on the part of parents. Parents who are looked up to by their children as role models, as guides, as places for direction for their life, when they say one thing and do another, there's not much that you can find in this world that's more confusing to a child than that, and more detrimental to their spiritual growth. For children of hypocrites receive the message that Torah is a lie, that morals do not count, that everything is talk, but when it comes to action, ignore the lessons that you're learning. And if the Mesilas Yesharim says that Leitzonus makes a person immune to Musar, and makes a person immune to improvement, because in order for a person to improve, he needs to be able to receive mussar and direction from others. And Leitzonus, the Mesilas Yesharim, says, is like a shield that deflects all mussar. So what must we say? Kal v'chomer, ben benoishal kal v'chomer, when you have something like hypocrisy that directly teaches a child to deflect all mussar and all lessons as being inapplicable, as being irrelevant, as being just talk. But when it comes down l'maisa, when it comes down to actions, do whatever you want, that certainly renders a child impossible to be the recipient of mussar, to be the receptacle of Torah lessons, and it makes him inviolable by positive influences, which means it's impossible for him to improve. The hypocrisy is not only when parents tell children to keep Shabbos and they violate Shabbos. It's not only when a father will tell the child that he has to learn and the father hasn't opened up a sefer in years. That's hypocrisy, but that's not the extent of it. Hypocrisy goes a lot further and a lot deeper than just do as I say and not as I do. Do you want to teach your children that midos are of utmost importance? Do you want to teach them not to hurt somebody ever? Do you want to teach them to care for people? Well, I'm sure you've heard that the way to do it is by being a role model for them and showing how much you care for people, and showing how much you would never hurt somebody, showing to the extent that you would go to avoid causing somebody tsar. But let me ask, do we really act as such role models? I want to ask you something. We know that if a child violates the rules of a school, frumkeit rules, very often or sometimes the school will throw the child out. Let's say the school finds out, I'm talking not even during school time, let's say the school finds out that the child was at a baseball game the night before and the child was giving out Schreifer candies to his friends. He went to a baseball game and bought his friends Schreifer hamburgers, Schreifer frankfurters. Boy, next day would be called in, or the girl, and the school would throw them out. A mesis amediach, a choiti umachti asarabim, somebody who's a tremendously bad influence on others. A sakana for the other kids in the school. I understand that. But now I'd like to ask, does anybody here know of any case where a boy or a girl was thrown out of school for having bad midas? For influencing other students to be, let's say, Balei Gaiva. Influencing other students for having other bad midas. Was a child ever called into a principal's office and say, Rachela, I heard, it's come to my attention, don't ask me where, but people have told me that you're a Balei Gaiva, that you're arrogant, that you brag a lot. And are you aware that gaiva is like being oivir avodah zarah? And not only that, but I heard that you're influencing other girls to be balei gaiva. We may not be able to keep you in the school if this continues. Never happened such a thing. If we preach that bad midas are just as bad as averis, serious averis, like avodah zarah, then why don't we act that way? Why aren't we appalled? Why doesn't our hair stand on edge when we find out that a child by a baseball game was mavayish the pitcher? As much as we would if we found out that the child ate treif by that baseball game. Somebody strikes out at the batter's box and somebody, another child, is mavayish him publicly. Why is that child not treated as if he committed a capital crime, which he did? Mutav sheyapil atzmai l'kiv shein ha'esh yal yalbin p'nei chaveiroi b'rabim. Why do we not treat midas the way we preach? Why do we not act as if we really believe what we are telling our children. Why is it that when you want a child not to speak Lashon Hara, you want to know why everybody speaks Lashon Hara, you want to know how we can stop it, at least in our own vicinity? I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you what I would suggest. If parents would send the child a message, if they would teach them from day one, from when children are old enough to learn anything, that Lashon Hara is as bad as any other Avera, as bad as eating treif, as bad as not putting on tefillin in the morning, and children would look at Lashon Hara differently. We tell our children that midas, a person that doesn't have midas, is not frum. We tell them that frumkeit also is bein adam l'chaveroi, maybe even the most important component of Yiddishkeit, the more important component, as per the Gra at the beginning of Masech Depeah. And yet we don't really act that way. We don't consider a breach in Bein Adam L'Chaveroi equal to a breach in Bein Adam L'Makayim. And so we are hypocrites. If a girl is caught in a school with a skirt that doesn't precisely fit the halacha, the way she's supposed to wear a skirt, the halachas of Tznius, in very many places she'd be thrown out immediately. If that girl is a balas lashon hara and publicly humiliates friends as a balas gaiva and violates all sorts of mitzvahs and halachos bein adam l'chaveroi, halachos and mitzvahs that are very, very severe, yahorig v'al yavor, do you know that Tosfos Paskins in Masechta Sota, Halacha lemaisa, that being mevayish somebody in public is yahorig v'al yavor, like shvichas damim avodah zara and gilui arayos, and the pri chodosh in a sefer mayim chayim in hilchas yisoidei haTorah echoes that, and there are others that hold it's not mamish yahorig v'al yavor, that you're not really obligated to die if somebody can avoid embarrassing someone through dying, but everybody agrees it's an avera chamura, but we don't treat it that way. And because we don't treat it that way, our children don't treat our lessons the way we would like them to treat them, because we're hypocrites. Imagine if a girl would come to school and the principal would find out that she violated an avera that's yahorig v'al yavor. Shvichas damim, gilui arayos, avodah zara. She'd be thrown out immediately. But if she was mevayish somebody in public, maybe somebody would say something. Certainly it would not be treated with the proportionate to the severity of the crime. Because we don't really believe in the severity of the crime. We don't really believe what we're saying. And if we don't believe what we're saying, and we can't expect our children to believe it. Worse, we claim to believe it, Bemuna Shalema, we really don't, and our children know that. We are liars, we are hypocrites. Hypocrisy causes confusion for children. And once a child is confused about our value system, then he's in danger of throwing it all off, or whatever parts he feels are inconvenient. Another thing that causes confusion amongst children is machloikas. Not only between parents, but between from a yidden. And I'm talking about machloikas shaloi l'shem shamayim. Even though very often children cannot tell the difference between machloikas l'shem shamayim and shaloi l'shem shamayim. And just to clarify the terms, machloikas l'shem shamayim is a disagreement that is positive and beneficial, a disagreement where the person, the two combatants, cannot and will not bend because they mean it with all the constructive and proper motives possible. An example is where you have a man, let's say, who got a heart attack, and he has two children who are both cardiologists. One of them says that we have to make an operation, we have to make a quadruple bypass, otherwise our father will surely die. And the other one, who's also a expert cardiologist, says, no way, just the opposite. If you do make a bypass operation, our father will surely die. We can't operate here at all. And there is no way that either one of the brothers are going to give in, and also there's no way they're going to make a compromise. There's no way. Because each one feels that their father's life is at stake, and that sincerely and honestly, they believe that if a certain approach is not followed, the father will die. That's a mashal of a secular machloikis l'shem shamayim. You can have the same machloikis shaloi l'shem shamayim, incidentally, depending upon the motive of the children, you know. Sometimes the children will stick to their guns, not because they feel that they're right, because after they heard the other person's side of the story, they figure, well, okay, maybe we can operate. But this big shot doctor doesn't want to admit that he's wrong, so he's going to stick to his guns anyway, because if he gives in or if he compromises, knowing full well that he should, even though it may benefit his father, he may look like the less expert of the two brothers. And unfortunately, we have machloikesin amongst Yidden where, for all intents and purposes, it may look like it's motivated by Ehrlichkeit and Frumkeit and Torah and Yerushalayim, but in truth, it's really not. It's motivated by arrogance, and motivated by a unwillingness to admit that we're wrong, and other motivations as well. But machloikis, shaloi l'shem shemayim, machloikis in a community, machloikis amongst Fruma Yidden, is the worst thing for children to see, because basically the message that it sends them is, anybody can say whatever they want, whether they're entitled to it or not, whether they're experts at the subject that they're discussing or not, and we're talking Torah and Hashkafa. Worst is when they see people who are unqualified arguing with Torah authorities. By Torah authorities, I mean people who really are qualified to be Torah authorities. Amirei Chachamim, great Torah scholars. When children see the parents coming home from shul, and the children were taught that the Rav of the shul is a great Talmud Chacham and a big Torah scholar, and he must be respected as such, and then the parents make fun of the Rav's drusha, or the parents ignore the Rav's pleads to be quiet in shul, or they see that the parents don't listen, these parents have no right to expect the child to be obedient in school to their rebbeim if they're not obedient at home or in shul to their own rebbeim. The covet for Talmidei Chachamim is the covet of the Torah itself. Hani bavloi tipshoi. These silly Babylonians, the Gemara says, who stand up for a Sefer Torah but don't stand up for a big Talmud Chacham. Because the Talmud Chacham is considered a walking, talking, living Sefer Torah. Now the truth is that not every Talmud Chacham, not even in the days of the Gemara, was considered a walking, talking, a living Sefer Torah. You had to be on a very high madrega for that. See the Marsha on the Gemara in Makkos, Hani Bavloi Tipshoi, and the Tshuvas Yeshua Ismalkoi in the back in the Lakutei Torah, if you're interested. But in any case, the kavod that is due to a Talmud Chacham is not personal kavod, but rather kavod for the Torah that the Talmud Chacham contains. And if a person is mezalzel in the kavod, if a person belittles Talmidei Chachamim, then it's like he's belittling the Torah. And even if you're not mezalzel in Talmidei Chachamim, even if you don't belittle Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars, tzaddikim, do you seek their guidance in all areas of your life where their guidance is necessary? What I mean is this. I'm sure that if a lady would wash a milchige plate with a fleischige sponge, I'm sure that she would not hesitate to go call her rav and ask her what to do. But when her daughter comes to her and says, well, I'd like to go rollerblading with my friends down the street, or I'd like to wear this type of clothing, or I'd like to go to this particular place, or I'd like to be involved in this particular activity, and the mother is queasy whether she doesn't know if she's comfortable frumkeit-wise with this idea or not, I would say that it's much more rare that a woman would call the Rav and say, what is the halacha, or what is das Torah on this topic? Should I allow my daughter to do this? Is this proper or is this not? In other words, do we pick and choose the times and places where we seek guidance from the Torah? The answer is obviously yes, it's true. And that's also a type of hypocrisy, because that teaches our children that the Torah is not completely authoritative. It's authoritative only when you want it to be, only when the answer that you may receive is comfortable to you, only when it doesn't make a difference if you have to kasher your dish or not, or you're allowed to eat this piece of parva kugel together with a milchige meal, or whatever the case may be. Once the Torah starts encroaching into your lifestyle, into what your standards of quote-unquote right and wrong, moral and immoral, then already the Torah is beyond the pale of what we're interested in hearing. And that's hypocrisy, because the Torah does indeed determine our lifestyles, and it does indeed have something to tell us in instances other than mixing up fleishiks and milchiks. Yet it's very rare that we seek the guidance of the Torah in such instances. And this is hypocrisy as well. The kitzur, we have to teach our children to respect Torah and to seek the guidance of Torah in all areas, facets, and aspects of their life. And the way for us to teach that to them is for us to do it. Our children are not going to treat their rebbeim in school, are not going to treat their role models, including their parents, different or better than we treat our role models and our rebbeim and our authority figures. So if we pick and choose where we're going to ask questions, and if we pick and choose what we're going to listen to, if we make fun, if we belittle, if we ignore our authority figures, our Torah leaders, our Talmidei Chachamim, our children are going to mimic our actions and do the exact same things to theirs. And I have news for you. We, as parents, are part of our children's Torah authority figures. So we really determine to a large extent how our children are going to treat us, and that is decided by the way we treat our authority figures. Now, a qualification to this needs to be made. Well, not exactly a qualification, more like a clarification. Because whenever I speak about this, and whenever I tell people that if they want their children to respect Torah authority, they have to respect Torah authority as well, I meet with much resistance. I meet with resistance because people come to me afterwards and they say, well, how could I respect this and this person? He's a Torah authority, and he's really not a tzaddik, and he's not a Talmud Chacham, and when I belittle what he says, or when I disagree with what he says, it appears as if I'm disagreeing with the Torah because the person is perhaps in a position of importance, or a position maybe. Well, I must tell you that if a person is not a Talmud Chacham, and a person is not a tzaddik, then it's very dangerous to portray him to your children as such. Now, of course, compared to your children, even somebody who doesn't know all of Shas may be considered a Talmud Chacham, and it would do your children well to obey what he says, and this applies to Rebbeim and Yeshivas often, just like there is a halacha which states that we have to respect Talmidei Chachamim and Tzadikim and Torah scholars, by the same token there's another halacha. It's called Chanifa. Chanifa is a very, very terrible aveira. The Poskim write that it's better to put ourselves in a sakana rather than violate it. It's one of the types of people listed in Rabbeinu Yoina as those who are not mekabel pnei hashchina. It's a terrible aveira. And what it means is, if somebody poses as a tzaddik, and he's really a rasha, if somebody poses as something greater than he is, or if somebody is treated as in a way that he doesn't deserve, too good, then that's chanifa. Rashi in Masechta Yuma, of Peivav Amud Beis, says that the reason, he explains the Gemara over there says, Mefarsmin es hachanofen, which means that somebody is not a tzaddik, but he is being treated as one. He makes people believe that he is one, but let's say he is really a rasha. Then it is a mitzvah, it is important for us to publicize this to people. Why? Says Rashi, Es hachanofim shehin rishoyim umarin atzmon ketzadikim, em yesh makir b'masa of mitzvah lefarsmoy. If somebody knows that a certain person who is accepted or recognized as a tzaddik is actually a rasha, is actually not a tzaddik, then it is a mitzvah to publicize this information. One, Mipnei Chilul Hashem, because a big Chilul Hashem can come out. Shebnei Odom loimdim mima'asov, shesoivrim alov shehu tzaddik. Number one, because people will learn from him because they think he's a tzaddik, which means as follows, that if our children think that a certain person is a tzaddik, and that a certain person is worthy of being a role model, and there may be a number of reasons why our children think like this. Maybe the person has a long white beard, and as a former mashgiach of mine, Rav Avigdor Miller, once said, Yeravam ben Nevat also had a long white beard. Or maybe a person likes to make himself look like a tzaddik, and he does actions and behaviors that specifically are designed to make people believe in him, that he's a tzaddik. Or maybe he tells people, you have to listen to me because I'm a Talmud Chacham, or you have to listen to me because I'm a tzaddik. And he's really not. He's really the opposite. It's a big Chil Hashem because people are going to learn from this person's actions. And maybe this person is a terrible Bal Gaiva. Maybe this person is a Mushchis. Maybe this person violates Bein Adam L'Chaver. It happens a lot. People come to me and they say they have a big problem respecting Talmidei Chachamim and Torah scholars because Talmidei Chachamim and Torah scholars, look what this person does. Well, the truth is that for the most part, more often than not, these claims that reach my ears are claims against people who actually do not deserve the image of Tzaddik or Talmud Chacham that they enjoyed. In other words, if it's an artificial tzaddik or an artificially induced Talmud Chacham, and sometimes we're under the illusion that it's a mitzvah to treat every Orthodox Jew, every Shomer Shabbos Jew, as a big Talmud Chacham, everybody who calls himself rabbi, because this way we get our children to respect Talmidei Chachamim, and it's not true. Please listen carefully. A Talmud Chacham is a Torah scholar. A tzaddik is a righteous man. What's considered a Torah scholar, what's considered a righteous man, is sometimes relative to the people we're dealing with, and sometimes it's absolute. The exact guidelines are beyond the scope of this lecture, and consult a big Talmud Chacham for the details of what's considered Talmud Chacham, what's considered tzaddik. But the fact is that to treat people greater than they deserve to be treated, to fool our children and to tell them that this person is a tzaddik or this person is a big Talmud Chacham and he's really not, is really detrimental to our children, and it happens a lot because the children grow up and they see the misdeeds of this person, sometimes serious misdeeds, and then they're under the false impression, they're under the delusion that tzaddikim and big talmidei chachamim act this way. Now sometimes it really is a big chilul Hashem. The Gemara says that people sometimes say, "Oy lohem lebriyos, shalom doitaira, love of imoy, leraboys of shalom doitaira." Woe is to the people that taught this person Torah because he does know Torah and he acts like this. But I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about a real Talmud Chacham that acts in a way unbecoming to his position. I'm talking about somebody unbecoming to his status. Position is a different story. I'm talking about people who aren't big Talmidei Chachamim. So says Rashi, number one is a Chilul Hashem. Because this Rasha that's a really a Rasha and he makes himself like a tzaddik, so people are going to learn from him. And you don't want your children to learn from this person. Va'oid kishbol of pranius b'nei adam oimri ma'hoyo lo yizchusoy. When this person ends up suffering, when this person is punished for his misdeeds, people are going to say, "Oh, look what happens to tzaddikim. Such terrible things happen to such wonderful people." And the truth is, he's not such a wonderful person. And so Rashi is telling us that it is dangerous to exaggerate a person's attributes to the point where we will believe and teach our children that so-and-so is a tzaddik and a Talmud Chacham when he's really a Rasha. There are certain people that are great Gedolei Hador, and Baruch Hashem, our generation is dotted with tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. You may not know who or where they are. A lot of people tell me that, but it's not so. There are great Talmidei Chachamim and great Poskim and great Gedolim in our generation. And I'm not only talking about people like Rav Shach and people like Rav Elyashiv, people like Rav Wozner, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and the list goes on and on. I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about people in our own backyards very often. I remember when I was learning in Lakewood, I had a chavrusa. I don't want to say his name. We'll call him Eliyahu, because that's his first name. Man is a goyin adir, a Talmud Chacham of a world-class Talmud Chacham. And just because he's not a big Rosh Yeshiva, or he's not a big Rav, doesn't mean that the man does not deserve the respect of a Talmud Chacham, the caliber of an Adam Gadol. The Chazon Ish wasn't a big Rosh Yeshiva or Rav, neither was the Stipler. Neither is the Stipler's son, Reb Chaim. Neither was the Vilna Gaon, to tell you the truth. We often confuse a person's Torah status with his position. And that's a very, very big error. Reb Aaron Cutler in his Hesped on the Chazon Ish, in fact, said that the reason the Chazon Ish is greater than everybody else in the world is because the Chazon Ish was able to spend his time learning Torah the whole day. And that made him such a great Gadol Hador, and he didn't have to worry about a position. And this is Rav Aaron Cutler talking. Rav Aaron Cutler was the man who, although he was a great, great Gadol Hador, perhaps the Gadol Hador in Torah scholarship, his successes and his accomplishments in terms of actually planting Torah in America and actual askanas in that sense, he was also the Gadol Hador. And yet this is what Rav Aaron said about the Chazon Ish. Now the reason I'm belaboring this point, the point of accurately assessing what's a Talmud Chacham and who's a tzaddik, is because it directly impacts on our discussion. We said that machloikis between Frum and Yidden is a big cause of Chilul Hashem and a cause of confusion amongst our children. They don't know who to believe. They don't know who to believe in. And And when you look for the causes of machloikis in the frum community, well, I want to tell you what that great Goyin and Tzaddik, the Satmar Rebbe Zeichet Tzaddik V'Kadosh Levracha, writes about this. It's in his Sefer Divrei Yoel on Chumash, in case anybody wants to look it up, in Parshas Nosoi. It's excerpts from a drasha he once said before he went to Eretz Yisrael in the year 62. And he writes as follows, and I quote, Hine, Sibo Ikris, L'machloikis ha-miskaberes bekerev ha-yireim. The main cause of machloikis in the frum community. He mipnei shekol echod oimer kiblu dati. Because everybody says, you have to listen to me. Talking frum kite issues. V'hu botuach be'eleh, and he's convinced, shekemoshe hu sovar b'daitoi tzorech la'asois, that his opinion is the one that has to be followed. The kachi das Torah. And that his opinion is das Torah. Tochi koshe lemevet. And this is what is proper to be done. This is what needs to be done. Ulefi she'en deyos b'nei odom shovim. And because people tend to have different opinions, and that's normal that people have different opinions, mevi ribui ha'deyos his pashtus hamariva beinehem, the multitude of opinions, the different opinions, causes achloikis. Im lo yisachtu lovoi bahaskama, if they don't get together and agree on something, ul hiskaven ledei achas b'rtzoin kulam mipli sheyamdu al daitam. Rather than getting together when they have disagreements and differences of opinion to try to figure out one course of action that everybody could live with, what happens is everybody thinks, everybody is deluded into thinking that his opinion is Das Torah, and that the way he thinks, that's what everybody has to do. That everybody says, Kiblu Daiti, they say, you have to listen to me. And this is not coming from a conservative or reform rabbi, Chas V'Shalom. This is coming from the most unswavering, unbending, uncompromising Torah authority that we've seen in American history. And he says, and if anybody was Das Torah, it was him, and he says the main cause of strife and machloikis in the frum community is because there are people that say, you have to listen to me. Now, there are certain people who you do have to listen to. And if a Godel Hador says something, and we assume that what he says is indeed Das Torah, but the problem is that everybody thinks that they're Das Torah. Maybe because they learned 5 blots of Gemara in Yeshiva. Maybe because they learned a few simonim in the Mishnah Brura. Maybe because they're very good in being Makarev people and they made a few Freie Yidden into Frumme Yidden. Maybe because they had a very good Rebbe. But see what this Medrash is doing in this location. The Medrash states as follows. Amalei Moshe. Moshe told the Jews, Oisoi ha-yetzahara, that yetzahara, ha-aviru milvavchem, remove it from your minds and from your hearts. And if you remove this yetzahara, v'tiyu kulchem b'yira achas u'be'etzei achas, you all be ba'achdus, you be unified. Rabbeisai, Klal Yisrael wants to know how to be unified. It's such a difficult thing to do, and this Medrash is telling us how. It says if you remove this Yetzahara from your hearts, you all be unified. L'shoreis l'fnei ha-mokoyim, to be able to serve Hashem together, k'shem shehu yechidi ba'olam, just like He is one. Ein tihiyeh avoydaschem yuchedes l'fonov, so too your service to Hashem will be unified. It'll be unique. And the Medrash tells us how to be ba'achdus. The only problem is that the Medrash says remove this Yetzer Hara.
That Yetzirah removed from your heart. And it doesn't say what Yetzirah we're talking about. Which Yetzirah do we need to remove from our hearts in order to create Achdus? The Yetzirah for money? The Yetzirah for Znus? The Yetzirah for Kavod? It doesn't tell us what Yetzirah. The Satmar Rav says, yeah, it does. Because look what Pasuk, this Medrash, is quoting. Ze hadavar she'atziva Hashem tasu. There's a Yetzirah where a person says, this is what Hashem says to do. If I have an opinion, I don't come to you and I say, this is my opinion. I come to you and I say, this is Das Torah. I come to you and I say, this is what Hashem says to do. I don't say, this is what Shapiro says to do. I'll say, this is what Hashem says to do. That's the Yetzirah. People have a Yetzirah to make their opinions into the Dvar Hashem. People are convinced that their opinion is the one that needs to be brought to fruition, because it's the Dvar Hashem. And that Yetzirah, if we remove it, then we'll be Ba'achdus. The Yetzirah, where everybody thinks that what he says is the Hashem talking, then we'll be Ba'achdus. And again, this is not a Reform Rabbi speaking, Chas V'Shalom. This is the Satmar Rebbe. If anybody in the world was Das Torah, it was him. And so, we have to understand that if we want to show our children that we get along, if we want to show our children that there's not machloikis shaloi l'shem shamayim, we have to be realistic. We have to be realistic and we have to understand our own madregas, our own levels. We cannot be caught up in megalomania, cannot allow ourselves to get caught up in this narishkeit. We have to know our own limitations. A little humility is in order. Father, a mother, a Rebbe should be able to admit that they're wrong when they're wrong. They should be able to admit that they're misupik, that they're in doubt when they're in doubt. There's nothing wrong with not knowing. There's nothing wrong with being in doubt. Shulchan Aruch, all over Shulchan Aruch, when in Arachayim, in Chayshim Mishpat, in Evan Ha'ezer, in Yeridaya, when the Shulchan Aruch comes up with a suffix that it doesn't, it's not clear on the halacha, it says Yesh Lehistapek. It says we can be in doubt. There's a doubt, there's a question. So what's wrong if somebody says there's a question? What's wrong if a father, a Rebbe, admits that he doesn't know? Imri Lechochma Achoisiyat, the Pasuk says, and the Gemara says, if the concept, if the idea that you're about to say is 100% clear to you, if you're 100% certain of it, as certain as the halacha that you can't marry your sister, then say it. And if not, then don't say it. Or if you're going to say it, say I'm not sure. Just because you're in a position of authority, just because you're a parent, doesn't mean that you have to know everything. Now, first, you have to convince yourself that you don't know everything. Just because you're a Rebbe. Just because you're a principal. First we have to convince ourselves that we don't know everything. And after we convince ourselves that we don't know everything, then we have to know that it's not necessary to convince our children that we know everything. Because our children are smarter than that. They're going to know that we don't. When we don't know, we should say we don't know. And we should recognize our own capabilities. In a community that's not homogeneous, this is a million times more important than ever. The Satmar Rav was talking in 1962 to the Satmar Chassidim in Williamsburg. So when he addressed them and told them that Jews have different opinions, and that unfortunately everybody thinks that his opinion has to be right, he wasn't talking about a group as heterogeneous as Miami. Although it's true in Williamsburg also, it's true everywhere. But if we live in a community where there are all sorts of different types of Jews with all sorts of different types of opinions, this is all the more important. Now, this is not to say that there's no such thing as right and wrong. There's no such... There's not to say that everybody's opinion is legitimate. Oh, no. Oh, no. There are opinions that are 100% wrong, 100% illegitimate, 100% inappropriate. The way we understand, the way we know the accuracy of somebody else's opinion is not because our kishkes tell us that it's wrong. Unless you're a big Adam Gadol and you're a Gadol Hadar, and then whatever you think of is the way the Torah thinks, and then your brain is Das Torah. We have a Shulchan Aruch, we have Sfarim, we have Gedoyle Yisrael that are available for consultation. We have our Rabbanim, we have Talmidei Chachamim, we have great Roshei Yeshiva, who are available for consultation when we're not sure. But in order to avoid machloikis, in any way, even without chinuch, the chinuch aspect, the chinuch component of it, avoiding machloikis is a wonderful thing. We have to understand our own limitations. We have to be able to say, I'm not 100% sure. We have to be able to say that my das is only das ben Adam. I'm not the Chazoi Nish. I'm not Rav Shach. I'm not Rav Moshe Feinstein. I'm only me. I'm not Das Torah. If you are, then you are. If you're not, then you have to realize that you're not. And to your children, you don't have to be Das Torah either. They have obligations to listen to you as a father. They have obligations of covenant, obligations of yira. And you look in Shulchan Aruch and you'll see what it means and you see what it entails and you see your child's obligation. That doesn't mean that you can't say, I'm not sure. It doesn't mean that you can't say, let's ask the Rav. It doesn't mean that you can't say, let's call an Adam Gadol and see what he says. It doesn't mean that everything you, that Faltarain in your cup, everything that your kishkes tell you, is the Dvar Hashem. It's causing machloikis in the community, cause machloikis in the home, domestic discord. Husbands and wives, parents and children. Now, I feel compelled to add to this one little point. Somebody may say that this vort that I just said from the Satmar Rebbe, this concept, is a dangerous thing to say. Because if you tell people this tremendous chiddush, and I say that with sarcasm, that not everybody who learned Aleph Beis and who learned a little Chumash Rashi and who maybe even learned a little Gemara, not everybody of that caliber, everything he says is the Dvar Hashem, very dangerous, because people will tend to disregard what great Talmidei Chachamim say, what Torah authorities say, because they'll say, ah, you're not Das Torah. Samarov says that not everybody is Das Torah. You're causing machloikis, because you're telling everybody that you have the Dvar Hashem. Well, if that's the case, then let me make it clear. I feel it's unnecessary, but let me make it clear, in any case, that what the Satmar Rebbe Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh L'Bracha is saying is not that we don't have to acquiesce to the opinions and the perspectives of our Gedolei Hador, of our great Torah scholars, of our great Talmidei Chachamim, of our great Tzadikim. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, just like not everybody is qualified Paskin Shilas about Siamese twins, and just like not everybody, even if you're not qualified to Paskin Shilas and Siamese twins, maybe you are qualified to Paskin Shilas about Milchiga sponges and Fleshiga dishes, but not everybody's qualified to do that. And just like if you're not qualified to do these things, you should not do it. Talmud Shlahigila Hoiro Moira is from the Machrive Ha'olam. You should not say, well, you should not exaggerate your own qualifications. You should not exaggerate your own qualifications for being Das Torah. And the fact that people do it, people do that, he's saying, is the cause of machloikis and strife. The main cause of strife in the Frum community is that people think that whatever they say is right. Not so. That's all he's saying. He's not saying that you should not listen to what Adam Gadol, a great Talmud Chacham, tells you. It's two totally different things. And in case anybody would like to misconstrue what the Satmar Rebbe Zatzal is saying, I don't believe anybody will, because I believe it was perfectly clear, but in case somebody wants to misconstrue it, we'd just like to add that clarification. So, to capsulize what we've learned here this evening, number one, confusion is the worst enemy of a child. In order to prevent him from being more confused than he naturally is, being a teenager, we have to be very clear. We have to make sure that father and mother speak with the same voice. We have to make sure that father, mother, Rebbe, big brother, friend, speak with the same voice that they with which they act. We have to avoid hypocrisy at all costs. Hypocrisy is the biggest source of confusion. Worst source of confusion there could be. And hypocrisy means not only committing actions that are directly opposed, that fly in the face of our words, but hypocrisy means displaying attitudes and displaying a value system towards mitzvahs that's inconsistent with what we're telling our children. If we tell our children that Lashon Hara is a terrible thing, then we have to treat it like it's a terrible thing. We tell our children that midos are all important, we have to treat it as if it's all important. And if we treat and any inconsistency in our attitude towards mitzvahs, any inconsistency in our value system is tantamount, not tantamount, it is hypocrisy. We have to strive for achdus in all our communities. And if we can't do it in our communities, at least in our homes, at least amongst ourselves. And the main cause of strife in the community is when everybody insists that their opinion is the Dvar Hashem. That Yetzer Hara we have to rid ourselves of, and then the Chazal say we're going to have achdus. Hypocrisy, machloikis, inconsistency, domestic discord, these are all causes of confusion for our children. And confusion for our children is the greatest cause of rebelliousness amongst them. And it's something that we have to work very, very hard to avoid.